Drasha for Sefer Mishpatim, Tav Shin Samach Dalet. The mitzvah that I've chosen from this sedra is Midvar Sheker Tirchok, to stay far away from falsehood. There's an argument whether this prohibition applies only to lies that can bring damage or loss to someone. That's the opinion of the Urayim. But a lie that causes no damage or loss is not included in this prohibition. However, the Sefer Haredim says that even lies that cause no loss or damage are also prohibited under this prohibition. Some say, however, that even according to the Urayim, a lie, even if it causes no harm, even though it's not specifically prohibited in this prohibition, but still is called an abomination. And based on the words of the Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva. The fact that the Torah says to distance oneself very far from falsehood includes a few different ideas. One is to distance oneself from anything that could possibly cause a falsehood. Also, to distance oneself from anything that is even in doubt of falsehood. Also, the Chasam Sofer says that even something that a person says that could be understood in two ways, one way that's true and one way that's false, and his intention is that they should hear the falsehood, that's also prohibited. Also, it includes even if it's only partial falsehood, or even if you delete some of the facts that would make it not totally true, that's also included in this prohibition. It also includes relating falsehood not through speech, but through hints or in writing, also is prohibited. The falsehood is prohibited whether the process is false, even if the goal is true, or if the goal is false, even if the process is true. And the Gemara gives a few different examples of each of these. For instance, someone knows for sure that someone else owes someone money. So the result is true. He's not allowed to testify together with someone he knows to be a non-kosher witness in order to extract the money. There, the process is false. Or a person knows that someone owes him money that he can't collect, and he does owe him money that he can collect, so he wants to claim that he owes him more, where the person will deny part and admit to part, and then be liable to take an oath, and then he can make him take an oath on the other monies that are owed too. He's not allowed to do that because the process is not true. Also, where the process is true, but the results may not be true. For instance, it says that a judge who has all the proper witnesses before him or whatever, but knows that something smells rotten about this case, and that all of this is set up, then he should not judge the case according to the evidence and witnesses before him, since he realizes that the outcome is going to be false. There are times when a person is allowed to lie. The obvious case the Gemara speaks about is for the sake of peace, to avoid arguments and strife. The Sefer Hasidim, however, says that this is only when you're lying about something that's already past, but not for something present or the future. Others hold that it makes no difference and that one is allowed to lie. In any case, for the sake of shalom and halacha-wise, b'shat tzadchak, in a time of necessity, one can rely on the second opinion. Some say that you can't lie outright, but you can say something that that if one misinterprets it, can understand something that's not true. Others say that you can lie outright for the sake of peace. And here too, one can rely on the second opinion in a time of need. One is also allowed to lie to save himself or others from embarrassment. That is what the Gemara says in the Seches, that a Talmud Chacham is allowed to say that he doesn't hasn't learned a portion of the Torah, so he shouldn't be embarrassed if they ask him about it. Or one is allowed to lie for humility purposes. That's also another explanation of Maseches. One is allowed to say that he didn't learn something that he did if he wants to be humble. One is allowed to lie for the sake of tznius, for modesty purposes. And this is what the Gemara calls poria. And also one is allowed to lie to save someone else or himself from monetary loss or other losses. This is what the Gemara calls ushpiza. One is allowed to minimize how much a host did for him in order that other people should not bother this host unnecessarily. Also, one is allowed to lie to present the halacha in the name of someone who didn't say it, but he knows that the halacha is like that, and people will only accept it if it's in the name of somebody great. Also, one is allowed to lie in order to be able to fulfill a mitzvah, or to praise a kala, or something that someone bought and can't return. That also a person is allowed to lie. However, all of this is only to say a lie that has no effect of damaging or causing anyone a loss. However, if the lie causes someone a loss or is damaging, then in all these cases one is not allowed to lie. Some say that in all these cases also, one is only allowed to lie on something that already happened, but not something is happening or will happen. There also, as we said before, in a time of need, one can lie for these things, even on something that is present or future. And some say also that one should can only say something that could be understood to be something that's not true, but not to out-and-out lie. Here also, in a time of need, one can say an out-and-out lie for the sake of these things. However, where there's no great need, one has a need for the things that we mentioned, he should try to be careful to only speak about something that already happened, or only to say something that can be understood to be not false, but not something that's an out-and-out lie. The idea behind speaking the truth and not speaking falsehood, Chazal say that Chos Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, God's stamp in the world is truth, and a person who lies is like he's serving idolatry, and those people who are habitual liars will never receive God's presence. And the idea is that Emes is that which is real in this world, and Sheker is really not real at all. It's the absence of reality. And we speak about the Olam HaSheker, the world of falsehood around us, which is a world of total imagination. And it could be that that's why God gave the power to someone like Walt Disney to create a world of imagination that looks real, that we should know that even though the world of falsehood looks very real and powerful, it's really only an apparition, and it's not really real in the gist of eternity. Also, today we have so many synthetics, so many things that look like wood but are not wood, look like cotton but are not cotton, taste like fruit but are not fruit, and so on, that we can really see that which is false gives the appearance of truth and reality, but in fact is not true and not real. And therefore the rabbis say, Sheker ein lo raglayim. Sheker has no foot to stand on. It's not really real. It's not substantive. And the letters of Sheker represent that, because the shin stands on a point, the kuf has only one leg, and the resh has only one leg. Whereas the word emes, the aleph, stands on two legs, the mem has a broad base, and the tuf stands on two legs. In addition, the letters of Sheker are backwards in the aleph base, and they're all bunched together to show that they have no real existence. And the words of Emes are in the right order, aleph to mem to tuf, and they span the entire aleph base, which shows that the Emes is that which is substantive and real. Emes is also consistent. The Sfarim point out that the Nifkar Katan, the numerical value of Emes, if you reduce it to a single integer, Aleph is 1, Mem is 40, is 41, Tuf is 400, is 441. If you add the integers together, 4 plus 4 plus 1, you get 9. Any combination of Emes is always equals 9. 2 times 9 is 18, 1 and 8 is 9. 3 times 9 is 27, 2 and 7 is 9, and ad infinitum. And that shows the consistency of Emes. It also seems to me, the reason it's the number 9, 9 represents the final number of individual numbers. 10 already is a collective number. So Emes means that all the details are true. Every single part is true, not just collectively it's true. However, Emes is not determined by what the facts are, but more of what God's will is for eternity. And therefore, if God's will is that there should be peace in the world, and changing the facts will bring peace, then that is what really is Emes. That's what's substantive, that's what's real. And it could be that's the hint also in the number 9, because the number 9 needs to have one more added to it to be the number of holiness. So too, when it comes to the details of truth or falsehood, you always have to add that extra 1, God's will, to know if it's going to be holy, if saying the facts are going to be godly and holy, or saying the facts are going to be destructive. It's very important to educate children to speak the truth. The Shalom HaKadosh brings down of a educator in Yerushalayim in his time who raised his children on telling the truth, and he told them that if they do something wrong and they admit to it and they tell the truth, then he will not punish them as severely, and he may even give them presents for telling the truth. Then if they lie to him, then the punishment will be very severe, not just for what they did wrong, but for the lie itself. And that way he trained them to speak only the truth, and that saves a person from doing things that are wrong, because if you know that you can't lie and cover it up, you think twice before you do something wrong. And therefore, one should not promise a child something and not deliver it, because you teach the child to lie. And not only that, if the children suspect that the parent is not always honest with them, then they will have doubts about everything the parent says and will never accept any education and any tradition from the parent. Those are some of the aspects of Midvar Sheker Tirchak, of the command to stay far away from falsehood.